Sex fans, welcome back. Today is Wednesday, September 21st, 2011, and you are lucky enough to be listening to the podcast edition of Dr. Dick's Sex Advice with an Edge. And I'm your host, that savagely scintillating sexologist, Dr. Dick. Holy cow, I am giddy with excitement because I have an extraordinary program in store for you today. I am honored to be welcoming my first transgendered guest to the show. Just to be clear, it's not like I haven't reached out to other transgender people over the last few years of podcasting. I have. It's just that I have never been able to seal the deal. So when I contacted Tony Newman, the author of the groundbreaking I Rise, The Transformation of Tony Newman, I kind of expected the same kind of non-committal response I got from the other prospective guests. I was so pleasantly surprised to find that not only was Tony willing to come and speak to us, she has an inspirational story of survival and triumph over the most amazing odds to tell. But wait, that's not all. This show is a twofer, don't you know? My guest, our conversation, and the themes discussed in this podcast easily fall into both the Sex Wisdom series and the Sex Edge-ucation series. Tony is, of course, among the movers and shakers in the field of human sexuality who are making news and helping us take a fresh look at our sexual selves, but she is also a former sex worker who honestly and forthrightly speaks about her life on the streets and as a trainee dominatrix. Hold on to your hat, sex fans. You'll not find a more startling and revealing interview anywhere on the net. Tony invites you to visit her on her site, tonydnewman.com. And you can also find her on Facebook and Twitter, too. Just look for Tony, that's Tony with an I, D. Newman. Today's program is once again brought to you by Dr. Dick's How-To Video Library. You know, even though I get tons of email from folks looking for my advice, I can only respond to a limited number of inquiries at any given time. But that doesn't mean that I don't care about everyone who writes in. I do. That's why I've set up my How-To Video Library. You'll find a link to this great resource right there on the front page of drdicksexadvice.com. Look for the Video Library tab. The How-To Video Library is the go-to place for all of you who have sexual performance questions. You'll be able to watch all kinds of deliciously entertaining, delightfully enriching, and oh-so-informative videos right from the comfort of your own home. How sweet is that? Okay, without further ado, let's get on with the show. Welcome, Tony, and thank you for joining us. I'm delighted that we found this time to be together for this Sex Wisdom podcast. Thank you for taking some time out of your busy schedule to chat with us. Now that you're here, would you like to say hello to all the nice people?
I'd like to thank you, Dr. Wagner, for having me, and I'm Tony Newman, and I'm very glad to be here. Thank you.
Outstanding. So one of the most fascinating things about us humans is our notion of sex and gender and sexuality. And I'm fascinated by how these concepts are both different and alike and how they intersect. And who better to talk about these things with us than you? So you've made such a splash with your book, I Rise, The Transformation of Tony Newman. As I understand it, this is the first memoir written in America by a member of the African-American transgender community. Is that correct?
Yes, and I'd like to thank my editor, Kevin Hogan, who is a Boston University professor, and Dr. Mark Weiss from Columbia, who wrote my foreword. So we were the first to do this project as the first African-American memoir written by African-American transgender.
So I gather from that statement that you have a different perspective on the whole transgender issue because of your background as an African American. Can you explain how that how your perspective differs than, let's say, white folks?
Okay. 95% of transgenders who are minorities start off from a disadvantage because they start from a struggle. Most Black and Latino and minority families, first of all, are not accepting. Once there's no acceptance, there's no money.
Oh, good. Yes. So it's often, it's a cultural thing, it's an economic thing for sure, right?
Acceptance and financial help from the family than what we get from our families. And I'm from a middle class, two parent, spiritually raised home, good people.
Uh-huh.
They just don't dig this at all.
Well, you know, all of us who are sexual minorities have experienced some of that at some point in our life, that is for sure.
But I find most Caucasian families eventually come around.
Uh-huh.
They, whether they are spiritual or not, you're my child. Black minority families, it is such a hard road, a pill to swallow. They just can't seem to grasp that, first of all, you were not gay. You then entered cross-dressing, which was a entertainment bag, and they thought that would fade away.
Uh-huh.
And here you are back again with tits as a male to female and hormones and hair. It's just a lot for them to take
yes.
in that three-part
yes.
series. So you go from you start off thinking I'm gay to I'm cross-dressing and then transgender.
Right.
But they just can't wrap their heads around it. And I understand it. I'm a Black middle-class family and raised and I understand it, but they just can't grasp what the hell is going on.
Right. So the first thing that I want to talk about is the vocabulary and how it's changed over the years. In years past, we used to use the word transsexual. Now, the more proper term is transgender. And from my point of view, this is a hugely important transformation. Would you care to weigh in on how and why this vocabulary changed?
The term transsexual and she-male, they are mainly referring to transgenders in a sexual manner.
Right.
On Eros, where I used to advertise and across papers and all over different countries, we are called she-males,
yes.
a.k.a. transsexuals. There seem to be people associate that with sexual connotations.
Yes.
The escorting in,
yes.
the districting in.
So the behaviors, the bad sexual
girl.
Behaviors.
That's the bad section of the transgender community.
Right.
You know, they're the prostitutes of the transgender community. Transgender is more your politically correct term to speak when you're speaking about the rights, about, you know, the other aspects. Of transgender besides sexual, that term transgender come in. Transsexual is still used on all the sex sites. You know, you have the Black she-males, the blacktranssexuals.com, and those are sex sites
right.
Where you can see, used to could see me and hundreds of other minority transgenders, mainly posing for pay in a sexual manner, doing videos and those types of things.
Exactly.
So I think it's more of a sexual thing.
Was
the term, and that's the sex side, and the transgender is more the political correct side.
Right. So, can a person be a man or a woman without the corresponding genitalia? Obviously, I think you'd say yes, but why do you say that?
Well, you know, even though I've done everything else but remove my male genitalia and opt for a female genitalia, due to I don't think the surgery's ready for me. It's just not up to par for that type of money.
Yes.
You just don't get your bang for your buck.
It's so true.
So, I mean, until they can bang that buck out and give me a vagina that works, and I've known 7 out of 10 post-op transgenders in my life, up close, in the hospital, personal, eating, sleeping, living together, and 7 of those are dead now.
Yes.
What they thought they were going to get and what they got, it was two vastly different things.
Yes.
And some of them got the cheap end of that spectrum at $8,000, $5,000 in Thailand and back. And then some got that $15,000 to $20,000, that upper echelon, vaginas, none of them really got, no matter where they went, whether it was the worst or the high price, they just didn't get their bang for the buck.
Right.
And until they can give me a working vagina where I don't have many complications, I'm not uncomfortable, I'm not in ease, I have to do things throughout my day in order to maintain it for my health and sanity, I just can't make that move. So my question is, I think it's what you feel on the inside.
Good for you.
That's what I believe.
I'm being told,
my book's out. Oh, you have a penis, you're a man. Society would say that we are defined by our gender, by our sexual organ. That is what Webster calls it.
Yeah.
A man defined by what he has between his legs. So I do have a penis, so therefore a lot of people say, even though I look like a woman and carry myself as a woman and so forth and so on, you're still a man. And then they still say that about my friends who cut the dick off. And got a vagina.
Right.
It was a man, so
right.
You never elude that anyway.
Yeah.
You're gonna be called a man with the dick, without the dick.
You can't win for losing, for sure.
I don't think that big of a difference. I don't think.
No, and I think, and correct me if I'm wrong, but I think that it's the individual who determines what gender means for him or her. It's not the culture, and it's certainly not the medical industry. Just because you have, you know, a particular set of plumbing, so to speak, doesn't necessarily make you one thing or another. It's, you know, what you feel inside, who you are, how you express yourself, that's the more important thing.
Well, I agree. I'm one of those individuals that feel that I am female. Because if I did not, and I had to base it on what my plumbing was, I would have killed myself during my 25-year journey 7, 8, 10 years ago. Because I never had the 20 grand to go get a vagina.
Right.
So are we going to tell those people, until you get that other sex organ, you are not valuable.
Right.
You're just not.
Yes.
So
yes.
What are they supposed to do? Okay, well, I end my life today, since I'll never get the money, I'll never be able to achieve that goal, I'll just kill myself right now. Absolutely not. Absolutely not.
And that's what was so fascinating to me about your story, is that you really, this is a story of a survivor against enormous odds, if you don't mind me saying that.
And most of the people, transgender, gay, bi, lesbian, straight, they do not want to hear it.
That's right.
I've been shunned by a lot of the gays and lesbians.
Yes.
And even my own transgender community is saying, you should, I wrote my story. I told it from what happened to me in the first person.
Uh-huh.
I told my story, my truth, my honesty. And I was raised, if you tell the truth and you're honest, there is no wrong.
That's right.
I didn't tell on anybody else's story. I didn't comment on anybody else's life. I commented on mine for the last 25 years.
That's right.
And in my opinion, that cannot be wrong, even
right.
though my own community, gays, lesbians, bisexuals, and transgenders, I've got some really not nice emails.
Yes.
About what's in the book, what I'm talking about, the prostitution, the escorting, the survival, how we exist. 95% of us exist this way, but nobody wants to talk about it.
Right.
And that's
well, it's politically incorrect, as you well know, and just taking, you know, being the first of any kind, you know, making a step out and telling your story, speaking your truth. I mean, you and I both know this because we are in similar situations, although
yeah.
our stories are much different. We have been on the receiving end of, you know, great consternation from, you know, the popular culture and even the people who are supposed to be our allies. And that's breaks our heart.
Right, exactly. You, I am one of GLBT. I am the T.
That's right. Right. So does transgender have anything to do with sexual orientation from your point of view?
Absolutely not. Uh-huh. Absolutely not. I think a lot of people get it confused with gay because I did go through that gay phase for many years.
Uh-huh.
I lived a gay life. I worked as a professional and educator. It was well known that I was a homosexual, but during that whole period I was cross-dressing and experimenting in the feminine, illusionist, and gender. But a lot of people think, oh, it's just, you know, something you're just playing, it's sexual orientation, it has something to do with sex. And that's absolutely not true. I feel comfortable day to day, 24 hours a day, even when I'm not with a sexual partner, as a woman. I want to be a woman, dress like a woman, I feel like a woman, I have the sentiments of a woman. So even in my private moments where I'm sleeping in my bed and getting my 8 hour sleep, my whole being is that of a woman.
Right.
So that would say that I'm not, you know, it's not when I have sex do I dress up and, oh, here I go with my heels. It's even when I'm in my private moments in time,
right,
I still have that urging and longing to be a woman. So therefore, I am a woman.
Right. So just to be clear for our audience, you are a trans woman, a male to female transgender person. Can you tell us about your life before you began your transition? You alluded to it earlier about, you know, growing up, I'm gathering, in the South with a loving family and also, you know, an educated person working at university. So your life, your early adulthood was pretty normal, yes? No abuse, no sexual trauma?
No abuse, no sexual trauma. I was a really effeminate young child from the age of 7 up.
Uh-huh.
It was obvious I wasn't one that could mask the masculinity. I couldn't play, oh, I'm not. It was obvious there was something different about me early on.
Yes.
Loved to cook, loved to hang out with the girls, loved to watch the women get dressed, and it was just obvious that there's something different about this child.
Mm-hmm.
My parents knew it. But, of course, we went to church on Sunday, Bible study on Sunday, children's choir, children's youth. You know, they picked up and be raised in the church, and I guess they thought it's a phase, and God, if we pray long enough, it'll phase right out.
Uh-huh.
I think my mother, wonderful woman, loved the Lord, good woman, honest woman. I think she thought if I just keep praying and keep hoping,
yes,
you know, keep hope alive, it'll live right out of this child. They will eventually... That's great.
Yeah.
But I'm sure herself she knew.
Yeah.
I mean, she acted surprised at 20 when I came out, but,
right,
you know, they had to know. I was so effeminate, so mannerism and speech. I mean, I watched myself in videos as a child, and like, my God, what is that? Is that a woman? Put a wig on that thing and stop it.
You are so amazing. I love chatting with you.
It's crazy. So, you know, I had a great childhood. I was an A student in high school, top 10%. Got a scholarship to Wake Forest. At the same time, Dr. Maya Angelou arrived as a Reynolds professor.
Uh-huh.
Saw her, met her, read her poem, I Rise. I come from the dirt. I come from nothing. 20 years later, that poem began to be real to me because I came from nothing. You know, I had no one to help or look up to, no role models to call, no organizations that I could reach out to, so... I named my book I Rise, and then The Transformation of Toni Newman.
Oh.
I graduated from Wake Forest and worked as an educator at several colleges, recruiter, missions counselor. I worked as a executive for a telecommunications company. For 10 years of being a gay male, I had really great jobs, made really good money, and I cross-dressed throughout all of those 10 years. And I was hoping maybe I could just do this, be gay, and cross-dress. Hopefully that would be, that was my secret. I went to the club all dressed up. But of course, it just, that longing became greater than lesser.
Yeah.
The desire became more than less. And I had to eventually announce to family and friends, I'm transforming. And that, even to my best gay friends, 12
yes.
years ago, they said, look, I don't mind you cross-dressing, but you got a good job.
Yeah.
We got a good life here.
Right. So, there is a misconception in the popular mind about gender dysphoria, and that is that it's caused by trauma and abuse, but you are a living example that that is not true.
I've worked with some on the streets, and they had horrible stories.
That's right.
I've worked with some transgenders on the street. I live with them in crack hotels. We move from one place to live to another in packs. I knew about 40 or 50 on the streets when I was on the street for 3 to 4 years, first starting out, spent all my insurance money, went through my savings, everything I had, lost my apartment because I just didn't have any money coming in and I couldn't afford to keep an apartment and get hormones and get electrolysis and get a wheeze and and get my nails and feet done. These things cost thousands of dollars.
Yeah, now I want to talk more about that in a second.
Okay.
And I assume, from what you're telling us, is that this coming out process, so to speak, was long term. You said that, you know, it's like 8 or 10 years that you were becoming Tony Newman, yes?
I prayed, coming from a spiritual background, I guess 10 years hard. I just kept saying, even I did not want to go there. I'd already seen how these people live. I went out to the street, even as an employed gay man, and said, oh, my God.
Yes, it's hard. It is so hard.
That I saw. They were not on TV. There's no authors writing books. What they went through, I went to the library, and everything was white-based, and the family came through in that very last moment before these people lost it all. Most of my white counterparts don't have to go to the extreme, right, as the blacks whose families say, you do this, you're out. We're gone.
Yes.
It's too much.
Yes.
I'm a Christian, but God is against you. I'm against you. Until you straighten up, you are not welcome here.
Right.
So it's a hard road for African American, Latino, Asian, the minority. Right. They come from no money, middle class, and most of them come from broken homes.
Right.
I did not, but there is a rumor about abuse and incest and all. I never had any of that. Never was abused by anybody. Loved, you know, I was in the band in high school, very loved, got a car. It's just something that's within you, and if you come from that type of background, it makes it even worse.
Right. So this transition process that you identify about yourself in your own book is reflected in the lives of a lot of other people, and some people have it much worse than you. It's fraught with danger. There's a lack of role models. There's misleading information. People are having to work on the street. There's drugs. There's alcohol. Tons of stumbling blocks that make for a very difficult transition. That's the kind of stuff that you encountered, right?
That is correct. Now, I do admit there was a lot of drug and alcohol abuse. Due to my deep religious background and education, I knew if I was to take, even though it was offered to me hundreds of times in those 3 to 4 years, let's drink a bottle. It's cold out here. Nobody cares. Here's that crack pipe. I'm living right with them in the hotel.
Right.
I did not, and that I can only say by the grace of God. I do understand how they do get hooked on crack, drugs, alcohol. There's low self-esteem. There's no points of reference you can reach out to. It is a very difficult life, but I came out of it, luckily. I mean, hardcore, but unscathed by addiction.
Right. Good for you. What an inspiration you are.
And most of them, they walk right into it because they don't know anywhere else to go.
Right. Besides, it dulls the pain, and it must be extraordinarily painful.
I mean, you're out there selling yourself.
Yes.
Just to survive. You've got the transgender doctor, who's our doctor, who's not really a doctor, giving us hormones and blockers at a cheap rate. They're ordering off the internet, so we don't even know if that's real hormones or not. You're assuming everyone else has done it. They're getting results. You're taking stuff you have no labels on, out of vials that has no labels. You're being pumped and injected. You're going to electrolysis and spending hundreds a week getting your body smooth. And with no support and no help, it's a difficult time. I wrote the book to show what we as the African-American, Latino, and Asian go through when you don't have that mother, that father who says, I don't care what you look like, you're still my child.
So you just alluded to this a moment ago. So before we move on, let's talk about the expense involved in becoming another gender. What was involved for you? I mean, you mentioned the hormones and the electrolysis and the weaves and, you know, the manicures and pedicures and all of that kind of stuff. The clothes, obviously. So that's all that's very, very expensive. And since you were doing it, it sounds like black markety kinds of stuff.
Yes, because you have insurance, so you can't go to Pfizer.
Right, exactly.
I'm here to get my transformational drugs today. You know, the doctor around. So I spent over the beginning $500 a week, that eventually climbed to almost $1,000 a week in upkeep in that first year just to keep it going. So when you're spending that type of money and you're only doing $50 blowjobs out on the street and $75 full sex encounters, you're out there 8 to 9 hours a night whoring. And most of the money goes right back into your transformational process.
Jesus, Mary.
Then you take the rest to eat with, and then you try to find a place to stay. And where better to stay than a cheap crack hotel?
Right.
That's by the week cheap, you know, sometimes no heat. You're living with crack addicts, drug addicts, alcoholics. You know, it is what it is. So, you know,
it's
really, really difficult. And most of the ones that I worked with back 12 years ago, they are dead. If they're not dead, they're heavy addicts.
Yeah, right.
I went to New York and ran into 8 of them. 6 are dead, and 2 are been addicted to heroin and crack almost a decade now.
Right.
I pray they get help, but after this long, I doubt they'll ever get really cured.
Right. So let's talk some about your sex work. Besides the street sex work that you did, you also were doing perhaps higher end escort work and BDSM mistress work for the fetish crowd. That's right, is it not?
I was a street prostitute and had walked on the female side 8 blocks from the meatpacking district in New York, and just happened to walk over where the females were. I was walking around in a black leather miniskirt, and a white young lady pulled up, female, and said, "I've been watching you. You're not addicted to any drugs, are you?" I said, "No." I said, "I live in Harlem in a crack hotel or a cheap hotel." She said, "Look, I'm a mistress, and we can always use black TSs who are functional, meaning they don't have any erectile dysfunctional problems." She turned out to be a NYU law school student running a mistress dominatrix SMB&B out of her Midtown West 4-bedroom apartment.
Wow, that's amazing.
She said, "Call me tomorrow." Now, if I hadn't called her, I don't know if I would have, what would happen, because I was still trying to survive.
Mm-hmm.
I got up that first morning and called her. She said, "Come over and have some breakfast." I went over. She said, "There's no drinking, no drugs. Can you be dominant?" Gave me a script. I said, "I can do anything you tell me."
I love it.
That was 100. I was getting 50 per date. Now I'm getting 100.
Uh-huh.
That first day, I did 4 dates. I left with $450.
Wow.
The next day, $350. My life turned around. She was a second-year law student. I worked and practically lived with her for a year. Saved up a good sum of money and ended up getting my own apartment in the Village, the gay part of Manhattan, placing my own ads and becoming a mistress, going from Terry, which was my street name, to Mistress Terry.
Hmm.
I found
Did you like
that
it?
The,
I mean, was this kind of fun stuff, or was it just survival stuff?
From that point, I was in heaven because I was working indoors. They were coming to me. No running from the cops. I was getting 300 minimum per day, and these were guys who were glad to see you and tipped.
Right.
So the sex part.
Because they knew exactly what they were getting,
right.
Because you were.
Would say, "Would you like to see my transgender mistress, who's black, and would bring me in on her sessions?" And some of these guys, I don't even think wanted even a transgender, but under that domination, you must do whatever the mistress says.
Right. So true.
And they're so open. They're like, "Oh, I don't care. Here's another $200 I do. I'll try to get this
$200. I love it.
And I'm like, "Okay, for me."
So
for that 6 months, I did what I was told. I was obedient. I showed up on time.
Uh-huh.
And I learned to like it. I learned after 5 to 6 years of it, I learned to like it. I learned my role. It was a good acting role, which I liked. It was like a series.
Yeah.
And I acted on that series before it got canceled for about 5 to 6 years. I had a starring role, and the pay was good, and I became to enjoy it. It was private work, my own boss. I could transform in my own house and get my hormones and not deal with the public.
Yes.
So it was okay.
Yes. How wonderful. So
she saved my life. It was winter, November in New York City. She saved my life. Because I don't know, you know, at that time the internet was new and fresh. They were just starting. The sites were coming up, the arrows. I had no idea about these sites. I learned from her. She taught me everything. And she said, even though you can escort, Mr. Singh brings a higher clientele.
So true.
They are powerful men and women who want to be taken control of and relieved of all that pressure. And they came to me, and I did all kinds of unspeakable things.
I do love it.
Unspeakable.
So correct me if I'm wrong, but your sex work must have put you at odds with a lot of the other people in the trainee community. Is that right?
Well, at that point, all the transgenders I knew were on site, transsexual porn stars.
I see, right.
Some had left the street. I didn't know of any transgenders that were doing anything positive.
I see.
I mean, I'd heard of the Transgender Association. I wrote them letters before. Can you help me with housing in New York? And they gave me some organizations where I did go to and got turned down, put on a waiting list. I really got no help from these people. And I was just so out of touch. I mean, now I know of the organization, Transgender Legal Defense Fund, and all of that. But back when I was out, the transgender, there was just nothing happening.
Right. You know, it's funny because
a lot of people... I mean, when and dressing up and making people laugh, they found that wonderful.
A lot of the people that I know in the trainee community just really look down on anyone who is a sex worker. And they can't deal with it at all. They just think that, you know, the community is getting a bad name because...
Yeah, they think I should have left it out my book. I get emails that you should have told everything, but left the chapter out about the escorting and the whoring.
That's so wrong. I mean, this is your story. You've got to be honest. And the truth of the matter is this is how, you know, a good portion, if not the majority of transgender make their money.
90%. How many black transsexuals do you see working at Starbucks or even as receptionists?
Oh, good for you.
I mean, you see them nowhere. You're more apt to see a white transgender in a public working forum than you would African-American or Latino. I mean, I traveled as an escort to Canada and, I mean, all over the country and the world. I won't say all because there's not 100%.
Right.
But the statistics say 90 to 95% of transgenders in my community are escort, prostitutes, porn stars, sex workers, masseuses. It's all sex combined.
Yes, right.
And nobody wants to talk about it. They go, oh, you know, we got our rights. You need to come to the rally. Well, how can you come to the rally when you're homeless?
So you're so right on. My goodness.
How can you go to a rally when you're hungry and you don't even have $5? But they want you to catch a bus downtown to the rally at Mayor So-and-so's office for transgender rights and equality. And you're like, I don't even have rights myself. I don't have a place to stay. I don't have food to eat. I go to the street after we get the rally done at 9 o'clock. I'm on the street at 11.
You are so brilliant. Listen, Tony, I'm just looking at my clock, and I see that our time is up for today, and I can't just leave you because there's so much more that I want to talk to you about. You're so engaging. You're so interesting. You have such a story to tell. Can I invite you back for next week for more conversation?
I would welcome it 100%.
Oh, you're a doll, baby. Good. But before we go, would you give us your website address and walk us around, tell us what we can find there, and where can we buy your book?
You can go to my website, tonydnewman.com, and my book is available on Barnes & Noble and Amazon, but you can go to amazon.com and type in Tony Newman and get it as a paperback.
That's Tony with an I, right.
Tony with an I, and get it as a paperback or Kindle.
Right.
You can order it and download it on your different programs on your computer, your BlackBerry, and get it and read it immediately, or you can get a hard copy book off of Amazon, and I'm Tony D. Newman at Facebook, MySpace, and Twitter.
Good, good, good. You're a sweetheart doll, baby, and
thank you for having me.
We'll be talking again real soon. And in the meantime, we will be visiting you at your website. Thanks, Tony.
Thank you. God bless.
What a terrific show. Well, that's it for today, sex fans. Tune in next week at this time for part two of my chat with Tony Newman and more sex advice with an edge with your host, me, Dr. Dick. Oh, and be sure to join me next Monday, September 26th, for a special Q&A show to celebrate my 300th podcast. Can you stand it? Again, this week's podcast sponsor is Dr. Dick's How-To Video Library. Listen up, buckaroos. Thanks to this amazing technology, you'll be able to watch your choice of smut from the comfort of your own home. With just a little prompting from you, they're going to come gushing out of your computer like nobody's business. Check it out. You'll find a link to this fabulous sex resource right there on the front page of drdicksexadvice.com. Look for the tab that reads Video on Demand. There is no membership fee. This is a pay-per-minute sort of deal. So remember that your pay-per-view minutes allow you to watch whatever content you want for whatever length of time you choose. Pretty goddarn sweet, huh? Until next time, remember, sex is good, and good sex? Why, that's even better. Over and out.